You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
There's an article about to be released on biznews.com and also on Politics Web, and the author of that piece is Magnus Haystack, who is a director and also investment strategist at Brenthurst Wealth. It's quite hard-hitting, and Magnus is on the telephone now. Magnus, you haven't made many friends in the asset management industry, and this article doesn't really go any way towards rebuilding those bridges, if you like.
Yeah, good afternoon, Lindsay. Maybe I've lost one or two friends, especially from the big players. We've been punting a certain line about South Africa relative to their investments, which was, in my view, at variance with what's really happening on the ground. And, you know, very briefly, if I can summarize, we all know that South Africa is going through a torrid time, and this started in 2012, 2013 with the first downgrades and the commodity cycle, and then the Guptas came along, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going to waste your time. But the big asset management companies kept on saying, everything's fine. Don't worry. Stick to your plan. Local is nice and good and solid, et cetera. And it was just, you know, it was just almost a slight element of dishonesty about the real prospects. And we see it in the subsequent investment returns, especially the last 5 years, have been dreadful for those people who took the advice of the asset managers, who by law are not allowed to give advice, but they do influence perceptions and market conditions. So today we have a great number of people, and I count them in the millions, are sitting with their retirement funds and their pension funds, provident funds, with between 0% and 5% returns for 5 years. So, and someone needs to talk about it, because it's a reality. I look at these things every day. I today looked at a big asset management company, looking at the returns of their RAs, for instance, and I saw a zero return over 5 years. Now, these are the things that I think are swept under the carpet very too quickly and too conveniently.
You just said a word that is quite impactful, and you said dishonest. Do you honestly think that certain large asset managers are dishonest in the way that they go about their business or the way that they market their business? Please be a little bit clearer on your claim of dishonesty, if you would, Magnus.
Yeah, it's not dishonesty, and if that's what came across, that's not the case. But by selectively providing certain information and selectively withholding other information, you're not giving the full picture to the average Joe who sits there having to make an investment decision. So there's been a very distinct bias towards certain types of investments, which is driven by vested interests. And it's a bias that has existed for a very, very long time. For instance, the large asset managers will tell you, we don't like cash, cash is trash. But it's also a reality and a business reality that the fees that the companies make on cash is minuscule compared to the fees that they make on an actively managed investment portfolio. It's a factor of, you know, 3 or even 4. And so there is an element of stick to equities, whereas South Africa in the last 5 to 7 years has been in a non-equity friendly environment, if I can put it that way.
Just before we get on to the meat of your piece, as I said in my introduction, it's coming up on a couple of websites quite soon. Magnus, there was the first exposure I had to the murder, the brutal and disgusting murder of a woman called Isabel van Coller, was via your Twitter feed. How does that make you feel? I know that it's because of social media that we're able to see the graphic details of what's happening in South Africa. And I know that it happens every single day in every single township. And it's black on black, it's white on black, it's black on white and everything else. But this was particularly unpleasant. At 5:25 a.m. or 5:30 a.m. in the morning, this woman was going to her job, a job which essentially helped people, all different types of people in South Africa, and she was brutally murdered. And I think what made it even worse was the fact that her body was dragged out after she was shot, dumped on the road, and then the people drove off with a car, which is probably worth, I don't know, 50,000-60,000 rand, something like that, a couple of cell phones, a wallet. How did that make you feel about your country?
That hits you in the solar plexus so hard that you actually when I saw it, I could hardly breathe. I was in such a state.
Me too.
And as you point out, these things are happening on a daily basis in Khayelitsha, in Mitchell's Plain, and all over the country. But the callousness of how it was done, captured on TV, just illustrate we're living in a dreadfully violent country. And I'm so glad at least there's been action, and I believe people are already being arrested and hopefully convicted. But wow, a life in South Africa is not worth much, I am afraid to say.
Did it upset you, as it did me?
Immensely. You immediately think, that could have been my daughter, that could have been my wife, that could have been my mother, and here by the grace of God we go, and it hasn't happened to us yet. And that's just, it really does hit you, and it's very, very difficult to, you know, to remove that image in your mind. It still plays over in my mind almost daily.
Yeah, me too. And the point is that if you're an international investor and you have a look at that, and it's probably gone international, I would imagine it's gone viral internationally because it was so dramatic and so brutal. You're going to say to yourself, do I want to be in a country like that where my employees, the factory I've just built, people have to drive to this factory and this is what they potentially are subjected to. So it obviously affects every single layer of society and every single layer of the economy as well.
It does. It is, and if you read other reports which appeared on other websites about how the police are not doing their duty, where people have to go to court to get the police to act, and there's just huge gap between, you know, between civil society and, or the perception of a gap between civil society and the police. In fact, most people that I talk to on a daily basis fear the police. They don't see them as a place of refuge and someone that they will go to in a case of emergency. They actually fear the police has become so bad.
What do you mean? Do you mean that they are complicit in these types of crimes or what?
Not really. There's just such a distrust in the police. In the old days, if something happened and there's a burglar in your house, you find the police. And there was a very good chance that they'll be there in 10, 15 minutes to come and assist you. Today, they don't answer the phones, they haven't got cars, or they don't want to work overtime, which happened, I think, in the violent clashes in Durban with the trucks being burnt. I was told that one of the truck owners phoned the police, I think, 5 to 6, and the answer was, we're knocking off at 6 o'clock. We're not interested in this call. Now, that might be, you know, just loose talk, but that's the kind of thing that we live on. So there's an element of, you actually fear the police. You'd rather call your security company to come and assist you because you have a hold over them because you pay them. And if they don't act, you can fire them. But there's nothing you can do if the police just ignore you and just don't come out. So it's not good for civil society.
The article that, as I've promoted already, is up. And a very wise person once told me, Lindsay, if it's a long article and if you don't want to read it and you haven't got time to read it, then just go to the prospect statement. He was talking about company results. So I've gone to your conclusion. It says to me this: let me remind readers of some of the apt lyrics in this song. Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender, pretending I'm doing well. You go on to say, and that was Elvis Presley, Freddie Mercury, but I think it was
The Platters exactly. Was the first, yeah.
Then you go on to say the following: we are not doing well, and not is N-O-T in capital letters. We are not doing well, and the huge, massive asset management industry must stop singing this song. In the absence of a dramatic reversal of the ANC's damaging economic policies and an improvement of its fiscal management, we will continue to slide into the abyss, and it goes on. So that's the end of an article which is fairly forthright in its assessment of what's happening in South Africa. Maybe you could expand upon that.
Well, I think what surprised many people, and that was the thrust of the article, we had a medium-term budget by Minister Mboweni on the 30th of October, which was a Wednesday. On the Friday, we had Moody's, and they released a statement about South Africa on the 1st of November. And without the Rugby World Cup, those things would have been discussed and analyzed and debated. And fortunately for the government or the Treasury, we had the World Cup victory on the Saturday, which totally pushed that aside. So nobody actually spent much time or bothering to read about the numbers in the budget, and if you sit down and without the distraction from the Rugby World Cup, and you look at the numbers, and these are boring and technical numbers, but it essentially says South Africa is hopelessly bankrupt. Our debt trajectory is out of control. There was one sentence, one paragraph in Mboweni's speech, which simply said the following: South Africa's debt, which is currently at 3 trillion rand, will move up to 4.5 trillion rand within 3 years, which is 100 days or 1,000 days from now. Now, that is an astonishing admission that there's just no control over the spending. Our debt is going to increase by 50% in the next 3 years. No debate about how we're going to fund this or why it's running out of control. Then you have the admission that we have 29,000 civil servants who earn 1 million rand plus per year. And that's just unleashed a torrent of an analysis of what people in government earn. Like the lady from one of the government agencies who earns 6 million rand, which is 50% more than the president. And there's some people earning 8 million rand a year.
Sorry, what does she do? This lady, as you call her, who earns 6 million a year.
I'm trying to remember. It was the National Endowment Fund. That's the point. But the justification put out is, these are private sector salaries, and she's entitled to that. And I grew up in an environment where private sector, you got paid more, but your risk was infinitely greater. You could be fined by your shareholders or your board. And this doesn't happen in government. And government has just become this, and Mike Sushler, in fact, today also did some work. And he talks about there's about 10,000 very well-connected, deployed ANC cadres who are earning humongous amounts of money on an unbelievable scale. And this cannot be justified, considering the economic conditions that we find ourselves in. This elitism, this 10,000 well-connected people earning tremendous amounts of money. Now, you combine all of that and you say, there's something seriously rotten in the state of Denmark.
Yeah, exactly. Very Shakespearean of you. How do we get rid of it, though? Because the person that was supposed to get rid of it has not got rid of it. He hasn't been able to say, okay, chaps, we've done a great job. The ANC was a liberation organization, and we've done a really good job. But unfortunately, we are destroying our legacy. Let's get rid of all this corruption now. Let's get rid of all this rot. And if... I don't think there's going to be riots in the streets like there is in Hong Kong. There will be some discontent, of course. But let's get rid of the excess and get back to basics. But nobody seems to be doing that, especially Cyril Ramaphosa, the President of the Republic of South Africa.
Lindsay, something that was missed and it was picked up by one or two media outlets. I mean, when, at the budget time, the minister comes and talks to the media before he goes and gives his talk. Now, apparently at this year's budget speech 2 weeks ago, when he addressed the journalists who were locked up, he said, I have restricted the price of new motor cars to 600,000 rand. That's what he told the journalists.
Yeah.
An hour later, apparently, COSATU got to hear of it, or some of the trade unions got to hear of it, and by the time he gave his speech, it had already been pushed up from 600 to 700,000. So immediately there was pushback from the people connected. So that's just a sign that whatever he's going to try and do, he's got to overcome this immense, immense pushback. And that's why I remain very skeptical that any drastic cuts in government wages and salaries and perks and cell phone records accounts, it's just not going to happen. There's just too much vested interest. And we're going to watch what's happening with SA very, very carefully. If they come back with some kind of offer, we know it's not going to happen. They will pump more money into a bankrupt state-owned enterprise.
Yeah, they mustn't do that again. You can't let it go because it's an important part of the South African logistics infrastructure. I mean, there's some really, really good people working at SAA, the pilots, the technical people, and it really is. I mean, it's got an incredible safety record and a great technical record. But on the other hand, yeah, just let it go now. and let, or let somebody come in, let Lufthansa or Swiss Air or somebody come in and take a chance on it. You went to a polo match recently, or rather you were invited, and that was an interesting... I used to go to the polo at Inanda. Do you remember at the Inanda Club, they used to have it at the end of August. It was always the coldest day of the year, and it was great fun, and there were lots of white people, mainly white people in those days when I went, having picnics and enjoying all sorts of things. What was the polo like this time? Give us the context of your polo reference in your article, please.
You know, I've attended one or two polo games down at Valdivie in the Cape, and it's great fun, and it's not my favourite cup of tea, but when I was invited to the polo in the park, which is almost like a abbreviated form of polo with only three horses, smaller field, and a bigger ball, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I went because it happens to be about 200 meters away from my house where I live. So I thought, let me go and take up the offer. And I arrived there. And first of all, I've never seen such a collection of high-powered motor cars ranging from Mercs to BMWs to Bentleys to Rolls-Royces and Range Rovers in my life. I've never seen so many brand new cars. Even me with my 7-year-old Range Rover, I was neatly parked to the one side. Mm-hmm. So that did not detract from this incredible parking lot of brand new cars. Then the place was very packed. It was packed and people were having a great time. They were dressed up and they were partying. But what I just mentioned in my tweet, that most of the people were black people and they were superbly dressed, beautifully outfitted, but they were not spending any minute looking at the polo horses. They were there for the social occasion.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that at all. And people like to pose and people like to display their feathers, like strutting peacocks.
No question about it. I just found it ironic that, you know, if ever there's a colonial sport, it must be polo, where the Brits went to India and thrust polo down the necks of the Indians. I mean, that must be the most colonial of all sporting kinds. And here we are, we have this massive colonial event happening. But so the people weren't too concerned about the fact that the game they're watching has its birth in the colonial times of India.
So there would have been, for example, I mean, I'm not saying there was, but there might have been, for example, EFF people there having a good time and dressed up to the nines. And then a day later, on Twitter, they're pillorying the establishment, if you like.
Well, I was just pointing out the irony of it all. You know, people walking around with Gucci handbags and Piaget watches and Lamborghinis and dressed up. And then the next day, they're having a go at colonialism. And that is just absurd. It's actually quite laughable. It wasn't being serious or criticizing anybody. It's just the absurdity of how absurd our politics can be when you get Julius Malema, who tried to become a member of the Inanda Club that you were referring to just now, getting up and having a go at colonialism and then enjoying the fruits of it. So there's just a dishonesty there, I feel.
Yeah, I think you're very dishonest by having a 7-year-old Range Rover. You should really sort of upgrade it, although it might be now retro, so maybe keep it. I don't know. What's the message at the end of this piece, which, as I said, you can read on biznews.com and also Politics Web? What is your conclusion?
You know, we live in our society has changed dramatically. As you pointed out, 20 years ago, there'd be lots of whiteys running around you know, the polo fields all dressed up to the nines, and now we have mostly black people dressed up to the nines. So the more things change, the more they stay the same.
And from an investment point of view, just carry on doing what you're doing. If you can get it offshore, get it offshore. Or is there any sign that you want to keep a little bit back?
You know, our bonds are very attractive. Our cash has been attractive for 4 to 5 years. We're offering fantastic yields for people looking for cash, and I don't think the average South African knows it. You can get guaranteed 5-year products that will pay you 9.5% in an environment that is an inflation at 4 or 4.5%. That has not happened in 30 to 40 years where you get absolutely rewarded for putting your money into a cash investment. So South Africans must make use of that because it probably won't last long. But you can get 9.5% today, Mr. Williams, whereas inflation is 4.5%. That is a fantastic, fantastic return in South Africa. Yeah, it is indeed.
Yeah, I mean, yes. Internationally, I mean, if it weren't for the RAND risk and the sovereign risk, then I can't imagine that people wouldn't look at South Africa and say, goodness me, let's just steam in there. Of course, then the gap would narrow. But on the other hand, it really is an enticing prospect.
Magnus, it is indeed.
Magnus, thanks so much for your time and your insight. That's Magnus Haystack, who's a director and also investment strategist at Brentus Wealth. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox.